So let me tell you a little bit about public health law and policy. Lainey just gave you the overview. Some of you may know us as NPLAN, National Policy and Legal Analysis Network, and we also provide technical assistance for the CPPW grantees on the obesity side. We are based in Oakland, California, but we do work nationally on obesity prevention and tobacco control. Basically, our approach is helping communities make the healthy choice the easy choice so that your environment supports healthy choices. So I'm going to talk today for 15, 20 minutes or so about primarily pricing of unhealthy and healthy products. So we're going to talk a little bit about what goes into making up the price of a particular product, and I'm going to spend most of the time talking about how to make unhealthy stuff more expensive, and then I'm going to touch at the end about how to incentivize healthy stuff by making it less expensive. So let's talk about a couple different strategies that we're going to explore here today. Taxes and fees are probably the most obvious strategy as a way to raise the price of something. Tax incentives are another way to incentivize positive behavior, and these are known as indirect policies because even though they are changing the price of the product, the manufacturer doesn't necessarily have to pass that on to the consumer. So even though there's a tax increase, if I go to the store, I don't necessarily pay that tax increase. The manufacturer may absorb it. Same with the incentive, they don't have to pass along that savings to the consumer. They may absorb it themselves. So then there are a variety of strategies that are more direct ways to influence the price. And we'll talk about a few of these. One is by setting a minimum price, a base price for something. You can't sell tobacco below X amount, for example. And then we'll talk a little bit about strategies to get at price discounting, which is a strategy that the tobacco companies have exploited mightily in the wake of tax increases. So how can you do something to counteract coupons and buy one, get one free offers? And then also in the healthy food environment, there are various strategies that you can use to control the price by having the government sell food on government locations. And so you can control the price directly there through procurement, healthy vending, setting the kinds of foods that you want to buy in the government environment. So I'm sure everyone is familiar with the strategy of increasing taxes, including the tobacco industry. In fact, they have said that it is one of their most hated strategies because it does, in fact, work in terms of decreasing consumption. So you know you're onto a good thing when the tobacco company hates it. In terms of authority, because I'm a lawyer, so that's one of the things that we look at is helping communities make sure that they have the power to pass something. So states have a broad authority to tax, and there are some local governments that also have the ability to tax, and we'll talk about that a little bit in relation to tobacco taxes. So that's something that if you don't know the answer in your community, I'd be happy to take a look at that for you. So let's look at what goes into the cost of a pack of cigarettes. So here's just a sample model that we pulled together for you. So if you combine how much it costs the tobacco company to make the cigarette and their profit, together that adds up to about $5. But that's not what you pay at the retail outlet because you need to add on the various taxes. So right now the federal tobacco tax is just over a dollar, so you add a dollar onto that. The average in terms of state excise taxes is $1.20, and as we're going to see, that varies widely, so it could be higher in your state or lower. And then there may be a local excise tax. So if you add those together, then you're looking at a little over $7, and there's also a sales tax imposed on cigarettes. And so when you're going to the retail outlet, you're paying close to $7 or $8. Now, as we're going to see, this is going to vary tremendously based on what the tax is in your community. In New York City, they have a very high tobacco tax, so a pack of cigarettes runs for about $10 a pack there. But if you're in a tobacco-growing state that has a low tax, then you may see a lower price. So what can you do to influence that price? Well, one strategy that communities have looked at is increasing the sales tax. So if we go back here, you see that this gets added on at the very end, and this is a percentage. So it happens to be 8% or so where I live in California. And this is imposed at the retail outlet. So if you look at this receipt here, you can see this sales tax happens to be 6%, and it's only imposed on some of the items. So this is a hardware store receipt, and duct tape is taxed. So for example, when you go to the grocery store, most groceries are not subject to sales tax because the government has realize that groceries are a staple need, and so we don't want to discourage people from buying them. But things like cigarettes and often sugar-sweetened beverages, sodas, are subject to sales tax. So this is a way to increase revenue. Unfortunately, what we found is that it's not very effective for a couple reasons. One is it's very small. You're looking at 34 cents. I'm not sure that's going to be a big deterrent to anyone's buying behavior. And also, you're not necessarily seeing it at the price when you're in the aisle, so you're picking up your duct tape or whatever. You don't think about, oh, and plus there's sales tax, unless it's a really big item. You're buying a car, you're like, wow, and then you add the tax, and it's going to be really expensive. So another strategy that states have used, and this is much more common, is increasing the excise tax. So the excise tax is different from sales tax. The excise tax is imposed on the goods itself. So there's an excise tax on tobacco products, on alcohol products, on various other manufactured products. And this can, in fact, be a strategy to visibly increase the price, depending how big your tax is. So why do we think that taxing tobacco products is a good idea? Well, we know, based on a lot of research out there, that as you increase the price, demand goes down. So for every 10% price increase, there's about a 3 to 4% decrease in consumption for adults of tobacco products. And different populations are more price sensitive. So youth are going to be more price sensitive because they have less disposable income. So if you're increasing the price, then they're less likely to smoke or they may cut down. And same with low-income adults. And this strategy works in a variety of ways. One is, if the tax increases enough or the price increases enough, I may just decide to quit. I may have been thinking about quitting. Okay, here's a good time. I don't want to spend any more money. Or I might cut back. Or if I'm young, then I might think, well, it's too expensive. I'm going to not start smoking at all. And it also has a kind of downstream effect on secondhand smoke exposure, because the less people are smoking, then the less secondhand smoke exposure you have. So here's a graph that just demonstrates very easily that you can see the red line is the price of, and this happens to be price of cigarettes, as that's gone up over time, the consumption grid has gone down significantly. So this covers 1970 to 2006. So I don't think anybody disputes that taxes work. And then another strategy from a public health perspective is that you can devote some or all of the tax revenue toward public health programs. There are about half the states that do that now. So here's a map. This is from Tobacco Free Kids. And you may not be able to see this very well, but I'll point out so that step away from the mic here briefly. But so this would be the lowest state. Is there anyone here from Missouri? Okay. So, and then as you can see, the tobacco growing states down here have taxes around 30, 40, 50 cents a pack. And as I mentioned, New York happens to be the highest in the country right now. So if you look at New York, this is the state tax is $4.35 a pack. So that's a radical difference. That's more than $4 more than a state like Missouri. So that is definitely going to show up at the retail outlet. And then on top of that, New York City has its own local tax. And so that's why you end up paying so much. Similarly, in Illinois, you can see their state tax is 98 cents. And they have two local taxes there. So if you're in Chicago, Cook County imposes a tax on tobacco products that gets added, and the city of Chicago imposes a tax that gets added. So if you're in a state where you don't have the political will on a statewide level to get something passed, it could be possible to pass something on the local level. Again, it's going to depend on the laws in your community. You can see sort of faintly there are a few states, including my home state of California, that are in bold. That means that we are slackers and we haven't increased our tobacco tax since at least 1999. So hopefully we're going to improve that in California. Okay, so why doesn't tobacco stay expensive at the retail outlet all the time after tax increases? Well, what we've seen is that tobacco manufacturers are quite crafty in this way. So if there's a state tobacco tax increase, or when the master settlement agreement happened, or the federal tax increase, they don't want the consumers to get sticker shock. And so what they'll do is they'll institute various promotions, and they'll do that through a combination of price discounting and various coupons. So you can see here, this is just the cigarette company spending. They spent almost $10 billion in 2008 on advertising and promotion. That's B with a billion. And more than 70% of that goes directly into price discounting. And so they do this through very sophisticated contracts with retail outlets where they can lower the price of different brands by the week. They can do it by zip code. They can do it by city. So that what they're trying to do is maintain brand loyalty to the premium brands, because they don't want people to switch to the generic or basic type brands when they see a price increase. The other about 30% are various promotional allowances. So those are things like slotting fees. When you go in, it's not an accident where the tobacco advertising and the products are. Those are usually payments made by the tobacco companies to the retailer in order to have the tobacco products quite visible. So what does this look like in the retail outlet? Well, you'll see various coupon promotions, and these are ones that are created by the manufacturer, and then the retail outlet will display them. You can get one pack, buy one pack, get one free, dollar off. Some of these also come by direct mail. If you're on their mailing list, they will definitely send you a lot of these. And then you'll see that some of these offers, so here's a buy one, get one free. On the left, you can't see this too well, but it's actually a plastic, it's plexiglass, plexi-wrapped, not glass, but it's buy two, get one free. So it's all pre-wrapped by the manufacturer. And this one on the right here, it's buy two, get one free. And then you can see that the retailer can change the price depending on whatever the price is at that particular week. So they can be very sensitive to buying trends. So what do we do about these kinds of price promotions if the tax is not sufficient? And we've found that definitely companies use these price promotions in order to blunt the impact of tobacco taxes. Well, one thing that some states are looking at is creating a minimum price. So there are about half the states in the country that have a minimum price law for tobacco, and it's usually based on a formula. So rather than saying tobacco can't be less than $5 a pack, it's usually a percentage. Here's the wholesaler price, plus you get a certain markup, and then the distributor price, and you get a certain markup. Unfortunately, what we found, and there are different peer-reviewed studies on this, is that these laws are not effective, and it's largely because there are huge loopholes for these tobacco company promotions. They're allowed to reduce the price through things called buy-downs, where they're reimbursing the retailer. So you go into the store, you get your cigarettes for less money, and then the retailer recoups the difference from the tobacco company at the end of the month. So it's very tricky politically. It's not difficult legally, but politically it's hard to get a strong minimum price law passed. But it's definitely a strategy that some states are looking at. We've also gotten questions about, can we just get rid of these promotional practices entirely? Can we get rid of the coupons? Can we get rid of the buy one, get one free? There are definitely more legal risks with this. And so if you're on a local level, then you may want to do a variation of a minimum price law, which is basically just setting a base price. And this is something that's done in other kinds of industries as well. For example, there's a minimum price law for milk. And originally, the motivation for these kinds of laws was not public health. It's really fair competition, so that what you want to do is protect the small retailer, so you get a big retailer like the Walmart coming in, and they're going to really lower the price in order to shut out some of the other retailers. So the minimum price is really for competitive reasons. So another strategy that communities are looking at is a tax instead of a fee. And the main difference here, and I think most of us are familiar with this from paying our taxes, is when you pay a tax or a business pays a tax, the government can do whatever it wants with it, unless there's some special provision written in the law saying the tax has to go for a particular purpose. So that is the case with some tobacco taxes, but in general, taxes don't have to be spent on anything related to what the tax is paid for. That's generally different with a fee. A fee is usually created to mitigate the harm of some particular product. So a company or a business will pay a fee in order to provide the money to clean up whatever waste they've created or whatever problem they've imposed. So an example that we have in California is on lead products that contain lead, lead paint, there used to be lead in gasoline, all of those companies have to pay a fee, and that money goes to screen children for lead poisoning prevention. In the tobacco in the environment, some communities have looked at imposing, for example, a litter mitigation fee. So you charge a fee on the major tobacco companies, and the money would go toward cleaning up the tobacco litter. So you see all these sort of cigarette butt cleanups, and that's always a major source of litter. And so what you need to do is establish a connection. How much is the fee, and is it directly related to the cost of cleaning up the litter? Another strategy, Another venue that people have used this in and are looking at is sugar-sweetened beverages. So soda tax, a soda tax or a soda fee. So then again, the fee, you impose the fee on the soda companies and the money can go toward obesity prevention. Another example that you may be familiar is for hazardous waste disposal. If you buy, you know, oil or something like that, there's usually a fee tacked on in order to properly dispose of the waste. Okay, so if you don't have political will to increase the price of tobacco products, there are a couple other strategies that can change how the product is sold. So these are non-traditional strategies, but some communities have thought about, what about doing the same thing that you have for alcohol and tobacco? So you have tobacco-only stores. So some states you can only buy alcohol in certain state-controlled outlets. It wouldn't necessarily change the price. In fact, it might reduce it. But what we've seen in the alcohol environment is generally consumption is lowered because you have less access to this. Another theory is that if you sell, these are a little bit non-traditional again, if you sell cigarettes only by the carton, then you would be charging a higher tax based on that. And a lot of people don't want to buy by the carton because psychologically they think, I'm not really that addicted. And then the inverse of that is selling by the pack and then increasing the tax on that. So I'm running out of time, and I want to talk briefly about the food environment. So the strategies that we've talked about for tobacco can be applied to unhealthy food in the same way. You may want to increase the price for unhealthy food in the same way that you do for tobacco. So what we can learn from the tobacco environment is that taxes and fees can be a way of discouraging consumption. And it is possible to use these funds to dedicate them for prevention and treatment. That, again, is a political decision. And taxes are part of a much larger policy movement. We have a lot of other strategies that are at work. What doesn't translate in the food environment, and this is actually a benefit, is that you can use some strategies to incentivize healthy choices. So at the same time you're increasing the price of certain products, you can lower the price of healthier foods, and that will make the impact stronger. So in the soda environment, the same kind of rationale works. There are many states, about 33 states, that impose a sales tax on soda. That isn't significant enough to show a dramatic price increase because the sales taxes are too small or they don't result in a visible price increase. And then there are about 15 states that have introduced legislation to pass a soda tax or fee that's either an excise tax or sales tax or a combination. And this is definitely something that, you know, if we talk about social norm change, this is something that's coming. You could do the same thing with a junk food tax. It's just not quite there yet politically. So let me just cover these last two issues. So another way in the food environment to change the price is, again, you could look at proportional pricing. We've all gone to the movie theater and they say, do you want a large for 75 cents more? And the large is humongous. And you think, oh, that's such a good deal, but do I really need that much soda? So one strategy is that you could require the price to be proportional. So if it's, you know, the price for 10 ounces is a dollar, then the price for 20 ounces would be $2. And then another strategy similar to what we've learned in tobacco is you could prohibit free refills or you could limit the serving size. We've seen as 7-Eleven examples show, we've gotten the big gulp, the super big gulp, and now we have the double gulp. So it just keeps getting bigger. So that's my time. Thank you very much. And I will turn it over to Michelle.